This evening's lecture is titled "Modern Civilization is a Failure." Is that title again? Modern civilization is a failure. Krishna consciousness is the only hope, only solution. All right. This is the title of a series of lectures given by Srila Prabhupada in Bombay, approximately 1970-1972. And modern civilization has got more modern and more of a failure since. And Krishna consciousness is still the only solution. So we'll discuss about that. Modern civilization is a failure. This may not be a very popular thing to say. In IIT, which is committed to success, material success, to the material success of its members, of the students who pass out of IIT, they mostly go on to be successes, although not all. You know some stories of non-successes who come out of IIT? I do. I know at least one person who came out of IIT and qualified. IIT in Bombay, Powai, and didn't do anything. He just had no motivation to do anything, was mentally just mentally a little bit missing, although very intelligent, but had no incentive to do anything, so just sitting at home doing nothing with a big brain. So it's dedicated to making its members a success, which is based on the premise that the whole society is successful, and the basic direction of modern society is beneficial, and that everything's getting better. This idea is called meliorism. To meliorate means to make something better. And the underlying premise of modern of mainstream thought in modern civilization, of course that's changing a lot now in the Western world, is that everything is getting better. This idea in the Western world got a big impetus from Darwinism, because Darwin's theory, as you all know better than me, I'm nothing even slightly approaching a scientist, in at least in academic terms. So the idea is that the best survive, survival of the fittest. So everything should be getting better. We should be becoming more intelligent and more capable, and in this way making things better. And the idea underlying the scientific progress of the world, what's called the scientific and technological progress of the world, is that nature is pretty rough, but man, by applying his, or as we should say in modern terms, his or her intelligence, can make things better by manipulating nature. And we're always finding out more and more things that makes the world a better and better place. So this idea is there, that the modern world, or the world, is not so good, but science is making it better. Not only science, but particularly in IIT, the idea is that science and technology is making the world better. But as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, modern civilization is a failure. Modern civilization is a failure. This can be analyzed on various levels. That life is becoming better and better by scientific achievements. Like I say, this idea was very prominent in the Western world, but that's becoming widely questioned in the Western world itself, and it's become mainstream now to recognize that modern science, or we can't blame everything on scientists. the imprudent application of modern science has led to a major, a looming major problem of global warming. So that's part of mainstream thought now in the Western world, that global warming, which is a result of imprudent, you know this word imprudent? It means unwise, not really thinking about what you're doing. So as a result of unwise indulgence in technological improvements, the result is, or an overall effect of this, is a major impending disaster on the environment, which modern science, there's no way that modern science can cope with all the effects of the multiple effects and the tremendously detrimental impact on human society, and not only human society, but the whole ecosystem and every species. This is one major effect which has gone mainstream, that Al Gore, he has a good name, followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, think that his name would have been better if he had become the president, because then everyone all over the world would be saying Gore, 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 which is the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's very auspicious to say that. So anyway, he came out as a politician and made a big presentation. He wasn't the first one to make it, not by any means the first one to make it, but somehow or other his presentation became prominent. It's interesting to note that even though he must have known, Al Gore, about the slaughter industry or the meat industry is by far one of the most major causes of pollution and hence global warming. He didn't stress this. Now in America and in the different parts of the world, people are very anxious to replace their old bulbs, light bulbs, the old style, which stems from Edison, going back all the way to Edison. He must be your hero in IIT, yeah? Prototypical inventor used to go to work even when he was 70 years old. You know that? Even when he was over 70, he used to go to work every day and work on his new inventions. So now it's being replaced. Everyone wants to replace it with the low wattage bulbs to save energy, and doing very recycling paper and in various ways they're trying to save energy. But they're not stressing the point that one hamburger, which a hamburger is one of the most popular foods in America, meat preparation. If you eat one hamburger, which most Americans do every day, then the power that goes into producing the amount of meat needed for that one quarter pound of meat, that's about a quarter pound is about what, 100, 125 grams, something like that. In America they use pounds and ounces. So that would, for all, you know, you're changing your light bulb, but it's That's equivalent to burning a light bulb, a 60-watt bulb, for like 3 years or something like that, something phenomenal. So, but he didn't stress this because he's a politician. And politicians have to be careful what they say and do. When Jimmy Carter was in the White House, he made one of the multiple political bad moves he made was to declare one day in the White House a no-meat day. And that was a very bad political move because all the multi-billion dollar meat industry didn't like that. So Al Gore didn't stress that. Everyone's changing their light bulbs and recycling their newspapers, but it doesn't really make that much difference. What would make a lot of difference is if they stopped eating meat, but they're not going to say that because it's a multi-billion dollar industry, and the oil industry, the weapons industry, which they call the defense industry, by the way. It's weapons are meant for killing people, and mostly, but they call it defense. And then drugs, in America and the Western world, cocaine as crack and ecstasy and all these kind of drugs they have. And even though they have technology by which they can, if a coin falls on the street in Chennai, from space, the American can see that and read the writing on it. But they can't stop billions of tons of illicit drugs coming into the country every year. Something strange there, isn't there? You know, huge shiploads and plane loads, but they can't stop it coming in. Something else. There's something a little unusual there. So, it appears that they're clandestinely letting it go on because it's a multi-billion dollar industry and it's not taxed. How about that? So anyway, what were we talking about? In the Western world, they're recognizing now that it's not all peaches and cream, to use an English saying. It's not all wonderful. The effect of science and technology is not all wonderful. It's not improving life in so many ways. The other day I was speaking with someone in Baroda whose father has cancer. Don't faint. No one fainted, did they, when he said his father had cancer? It's a common thing. But we were just discussing how a generation ago in India, I came to India first in, a generation ago, you could say, 1975, I came first to India. And at that time, cancer was uncommon in India. Now it's common. Why is that? Well, air pollution, water pollution, the food comes in plastic, including the water. It's carcinogenic. You're buying your Bisleri water because you don't want to drink the corporation's poison. You're drinking Bisleri's poison instead. If it's in plastic, it's poisonous. That's all. So, then what is stress? That's also a factor, even in cancer, because cancer is in any disease. Stress, lack of sleep, lack of regulation. That it will enhance the progress or. It will speed up the progress, influence the progress of any disease. So like that, if you have so many poisons in your body, what to speak of meat eating? Of course, the man I'm referring to who had cancer, he's a lifelong vegetarian. There are still some in India. But meat eating, meat is highly carcinogenic. In India, they're pushing, it's great for health, big strong body, but a big strong body is more likely to be wasted away by cancer if you build it up with meat. So that's just one of many, many, many examples of how life isn't really better for all the scientific progress that we have, that we may have modern medicines, but then we have so many diseases. And you may think that we're stopping diseases, but new ones are coming all the time. Even there's some studies which show that the propaganda that the vaccine stopped the diseases, it's actually propaganda. Because if you see the occurrences, if you see the statistics for occurrences of smallpox and tuberculosis, anyway it was going down even before the vaccine came out. And the vaccine came out when just before it was practically at its lowest point anyway. And although there are penicillin and other vaccines that come out for tuberculosis, but what do you know? Tuberculosis is going around the world again. The vaccines, they only work for, and in a more powerful strain that the vaccines don't work. So, a lot of the talk about the scientific progress as it's been made is just talk, actually. What is claimed is not actually a fact. The overall claim is that life is getting better. Well, it's highly questionable that however rich you may be, most people in the world are mostly the richest people in the world don't get, or the people in the upper economic bracket, they never breathe fresh air. They never drink water without pollutants or fresh water. They don't know what it is. They never take fresh food. The food they eat is always full of poison. Every bite that you and me eat every day is full of poison. Every breath we breathe is full of poison. IIT is a little sheltered from the intense pollution of Chennai City, but it's an island, and in the middle of, and it's definitely the pollution is coming in. It may not be as intense as when you go outside, but it's there. Every time a two-wheeler goes past, unless it's a push bicycle, then there's more pollution. So you can have billions of dollars, but you can't have fresh air. You can have billions of dollars, but you can't have food that doesn't kill you. Doesn't. So what actually is the benefit? Now we're talking about the physical defects. Then what to speak of the so many ways, the social defects. Previously, a man got married to a woman and they lived, you know, more or less happily, you could say. There were instances of fighting between husband and wife, but not that much. Mostly, if you see your parents or grandparents, they lived more or less fairly peacefully. And that's true in the Western world also, believe it or not. But nowadays, if it's like an achievement, it's an unusual thing if a man and a woman live together peacefully. So what's the use of all, you know, you have a big apartments and gyms and air conditioning, but you can't live peacefully, and you can't eat food that doesn't kill you. Is this really the progress of human society? On the gross level, it's produced more problems than it has purported to solve. And then what to speak at the psychological level? People are... That's another thing. There were no psychologists in India previously. There was no need. I lived in Bangladesh during most of the 1980s, And still Bangladesh is what they would call a backward country. They're not very technologically developed. It's more developed now. But psychologically what we would call mentally disturbed, there are very few such people. And even such people, they were crazy, but the crazy people were mostly crazy in, like I say, not many, but not unhappy crazy. Not depressed or schizophrenic or violent, but just, you could say, something like highly eccentric, you could say. But nowadays, it's common that the craziness due to madness, due to extreme frustration, that people just kill others for no reason. Last time I was in Japan, one devotee was telling me that it's become a common thing that children, they just kill their parents without any premeditation. And then when they're asked why, they say, well, why not? Well, why did you kill your mother? You had something against her? No, I just felt like it. So, and why your mother in particular? Well, she was just the nearest person. Because there may be various reasons. And then, what is it? 30,000 suicides a year in Japan. That's a lot, isn't it? And that's a successful country. So they grow up. These kids grow up with these computer games in which you're just killing people all the time. And then they don't have any actual human relationships. And so they don't know what it is to have any love or affection. And for them, it just to zap or kill someone, it's just something they do all the time. And they don't see any difference between something on a computer screen and something that we would call a human being. That consciousness, of course, it also comes from meat eating. Whereas Japan used to be a largely vegetarian country due to Buddhist influence. Not everyone, but it used to be like that. And it was like all the Buddhist countries, even those who ate meat, they would never dream of eating beef. But now there's no idea in Japan that eating meat is wrong in any way or that beef is wrong. A generation ago also, I used to be in and out of Thailand, where at that time, more or less everyone ate every kind of meat, fish, and all kinds of things, snakes, rats, and not so much cockroaches. That's more common in other countries, in Africa. But these crickets and all kinds of, grasshopper crickets. That's a common favorite food there. But not beef. Now they eat beef. It's the progress or degradation of society. So modern civilization is a failure in as much as it has failed to deliver a better way of life, even in terms of material comfort, we could say. Of course, there are something you could say, just like electric fans. Most people in India couldn't dream of living without electric fans nowadays, right? Although previously people had hand fans. And it's not, the electric fan is more effective, and air conditioning is more effective. The whole, in the Gulf, Dubai and Sharjah and all these places couldn't exist if there wasn't air conditioning. I mean, the way it goes on now, people wouldn't agree to live there because most of the year it's too damn hot. I mean, like Chennai in the summer most of the year. But with air conditioning, then people can tolerate to live. Otherwise, now the huge city, Dubai, well, it's becoming huge. It was like a little village, like an overgrown village. even 15 years ago, and now it's a fairyland, and it's just all everything big and modern and technological, but no one would agree to it wouldn't be like that unless they had air conditioning, because who would want to stay in such a hot place? So some things are there, yeah, electric fan, okay, good. But to get that electricity and everything, all the what are the ways of producing electricity? Hydroelectric, okay, that adversely affects the ecosystem, and oil all over the world, 24 hours a day, they're pumping up, wherever there's oil, they're pumping it up, pump, 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 pump. And sometimes there are spills, and it's very polluting. Electricity is not much produced from oil nowadays. What are the major sources of electric power these days?
Nuclear.
Thermal means coal, mostly, yeah. Hydroelectric, not so much. Is it? In different countries, it depends where you are. Not in Dubai, that's for sure. There's no... Well, I guess you could do it with the sea waves. Anyway. So, all these things are polluting. Nuclear, there's the pollution that you produce. Even with the pollution that comes out of your bajaj, it kind of merges into the atmosphere. But with nuclear waste, that just stays there, right? For practically forever. And it's just highly polluting. Thermal, again, means big stacks of coal smoke pumping, belching out into the atmosphere. So, you do get some advantage, no doubt, but then the disadvantage, is it really worth it to have all these advantages and with all the disadvantages? So, even on the gross platform, what to speak of the social and psychological platform, we can say modern civilization is a failure. It's failed to deliver a better way of life. Now, from an even more important platform, it is certainly a failure from the very outset, because the idea that modern civilization is making everything better for everyone. The very idea from the very outset is misleading. It's based on the premise that we're here in this world to be happy. And so we should make everything as comfortable as possible and have all kind of gizmos and gadgets to make life more interesting. We can have TV to make, we can see all kinds of interesting and exciting things. And all kinds of gizmo, you all know that word? Gizmo means like some kind of flashy modern gadget that you can use. It's slang. So, the idea that by producing all these things that, or the very idea that we shall improve the quality of life in this world is itself a misconception, because human life is meant for becoming a success, but then we have to understand what real success is. Real success means to understand who I am. I'm not this body, that I'm eternal spirit soul, Atma, and the material world is by definition, by its very nature, miserable. So the whole prospect of improving society so that we all become happy is doomed from the beginning, because the very nature of this world is miserable. It's not possible to make this world a happy place, because it is by nature a place of suffering. So it's based on the idea that by getting more and more scientific knowledge, we will improve human society by increase of knowledge. But all this knowledge has been developed on the basic platform of ignorance. Ignorance of our actual existential position. That we are all eternal living beings. We are not the body. Life is temporary. And there's no use in trying to make it better in this world, because anyway that's not possible. But this world is full of misery. But real success means to purify our consciousness, instead of trying to develop external things, to develop internally, to improve our consciousness so that we become detached from this material world and go to the spiritual world. Whereas the idea that we, modern civilization, we shall make everything in this world very nice, it actually works against the principle of real success of human life, because it increases attachment to this material world. So it, from the very beginning, it's not only a failure, but it's going 100 kilometers an hour in the wrong direction. It's development, but totally in the wrong direction as to what is the real purpose of life. To develop the higher consciousness that is required for spiritual understanding, it is always described in Shastra that we should come to the platform of sattva gun, which means living very peacefully and not endeavoring for more and more material comforts and acquisitions, which is rajagun. So modern society is based on rajagun with a strong admixture of tamagun. That tamagun, that there are two major manifestations of tamagun. One is listlessness, apathy, lethargy, no motivation. I was speaking about that IIT graduate. No motivation. Just not interested in anything. That is tamasic. But another manifestation of tamagun is the unrestricted violence, hatred, for no reason or for a very poor reason, inflicting harm on others. So that's very prominent in the modern age. In the name of religion, there are so many killings going on, so many wars. In the name of benefiting human society, a big powerful nation will invade another country and kill so many people. So these are all symptoms of very low consciousness. So real success is to get free from this material world. But modern civilization works against this. So on this even more intrinsic or essential platform, modern civilization is a failure. It fails to deliver what it says it will deliver. Well, it does deliver technological, we can say, improvement, if you want to call it an improvement. But the side effects are worse than the side effects are worse than the so-called improvement. It's a classical case of the operation was successful, but the patient died. Everything went according to plan. The operation was very good, but anyway, the patient died. But it was a good operation. Everything was done according to plan. So on that platform, people are, even on the gross platform, people are not more happy. Are they more comfortable? That's also arguable. People say, if we say, well, we're not in favor of all these modern improvements, or people say, well, you know, you want to go back to a primitive life. You're living in the village, no electricity, and then what will we do without paved roads? And, well, yeah, electricity, that does make comfort, like the electric fan, or the electric light, or the paved road in the monsoon, the muddy village. It's difficult, you can say. But then the payback of that is how you have to work so hard to maintain all this. And again, you get your pollution and everything. And even you have your electric light, but that means you have to, at least in the traditional society, work finishes at sundown. But in modern life, then you're just working 24 hours a day. There's no end. It's more slavery. It's just like you see in a prison, you're kept in, you have to stay in a small cubicle, right? And at work, too, you're in a small cubicle, isn't it? You're stuck there.
UPS.
Hmm? UPS. What's that? United Parcel Service. Yeah, that's United Parcel Service, uninterrupted power supply. That's another symptom of the modern world. Unlimited acronyms for all kinds of things. PCM, CIA. What does that mean? Does anyone know? You should all know. PMC, CIA slot. Everyone has it in their computer. No one knows what it means. Someone knows what it means. USB ports. IBM. all this. What is that? BCCI, is it? Something like that. Board of Cricket, something like that. So many acronyms. It's a world of acronyms. Now they have this advertisement, some mobile phone company. They show Mr. 98001123472, Mrs. That's what they're afraid of, that everyone just becomes a number. No name, just a number. They were very afraid of that in certain parts of the Western world, that you just have a number and you just become another number in the system. You're just a number. So the advantages are cancelled out, more than cancelled out, by the disadvantages. And as far as the real purpose of human life is to develop spiritual consciousness, there's no thought of that whatsoever. In fact, modern civilization began to develop this in the Western world, this scientific way of thinking developed in protest against church dogmatism. It's a long history, beginning with Copernicus, with the church fathers. They had no real business in saying how the universe is going on, but they presumed that the universe is geocentric. The earth is at the center. And Copernicus said, well, I don't think so. And then Galileo said, I don't think so either. And that was the end of Galileo. But eventually it was shown to be scientifically untenable that the earth is at the center of the universe. And so they thought, well, they got that wrong. They must have got everything else wrong too. And so modern science developed as a protest or in opposition to religion. And traditionally, science, although there's no real need for it to be, as we have Vedic science also, which is quite compatible with theism, because the Vedic knowledge speaks of the transcendental world beyond this material world, but we do have Vedic mathematics, Vedic geology, gemology, and astronomy. It's all there. With Vedic mathematics, you can multiply. You tell someone trained in, you know this, right? Vedic mathematics, you give them 2 15-digit figure numbers, and you just tell them, and they'll have it worked out quicker than you can punch it into your computer. They'll tell you the answer. How? I don't know. They know. They're, but they can do it. So, science is there. They're all the words. There are words in Sanskrit for sine, cosine, all these things. It's not something that was developed by the Greeks. It's there previous to the Greek civilization. So modern ethos came out strongly anti-religious, and so people are discouraged from having it. Traditionally one has been considered to be a, if one is a scientist, he can't also be a theist. It's considered contradictory. But if you simply study matter without going beyond that, that's extremely limited. And if you simply study matter on the basis of thinking that actually there is an existence, generally scientists, they don't indulge in much philosophy, but there is an underlying philosophy in the modern scientific outlook, or what we can call the traditional scientific outlook, that life in this world is all there is. There's nothing more than that. And therefore, we should just try to improve this world and be happy in it. It's unstated, but it's there. That has been the goal of Edison and others. Thank you for the electric. Now they're mostly all neon bulbs. He didn't invent that. Thank you. So this is an extremely limited and foolish outlook. That people may be very intelligent materially, so intelligent that they can, you know, they're capable. I mean, you're all intelligent people. You're all capable, you know, very complex calculi. You can handle it, I presume. That's why you're here. But that, you may be very intelligent on one side, but by neglecting another side, you can be very unintelligent on another side. And generally we find that people are only intelligent on one side. You'll find someone who's just the typical absent-minded professor. He's very intelligent. He can do all kinds of calculi, all this kind of thing, but he can never remember where he put his car keys. So he spends, you know, half an hour every morning searching for his car keys, so he can drive to the, so he can drive to the university. It's a common thing. So intelligent on one side, foolish on another, or less intelligent. You could say. So intelligent enough to have all kinds of to be able to hold so many theoretical constructs in the mind. Mathematics is applicable to practical life, but practically speaking, it's theoretical, isn't it? Well, sine, cosine, I mean, what actually is it? Is there anything you can't pick up a sine and say, not, well, you can pick up an S-I-G-N, but not an S-I-N-E. So, or a cosine. It's something theoretical, but by trigonometry and all these different, it can be applied in practical life, but it's a theoretical, it takes place in the thought, in the consciousness. So people who are able to think very subtly and theoretically in some ways, they never made the breakthrough to a higher level of subtle thinking. Of thinking that beyond, is there anything beyond this? They've just presumed without any research or inquiry that they've just presumed that all spirit, what we call spiritual life, it's nothing for us. That we just don't believe in it. Now, again, I'm talking a lot about America because when we talk about modern civilization, then America is the leader. It's not the only country, but it's the leader in modern civilization in pretty much all respects. In science and in development, you could say America is in many ways the most developed country in the world. Although other countries may be more developed in some ways, but America is just so big. It's developed and it's big, and it's economically and militarily powerful. So, and in terms of modern culture, there's no doubt America is the cultural leader of the world. Into Hollywood and in terms of culture, just the whole way people think and act in this world. Of course, that's not all the world, but it is very dominant. And there are backlashes against that, especially in the Islamic world. Many people in the Islamic world don't want to accept that, and they make it known in various ways. So, anyway, these are very broad topics of discussion. I'm saying America, just giving examples, that, what was I saying? About in America at the present time, there's a very strong upsurge of atheistic propaganda. Probably as a reaction to the unexpected number or the unexpected force of scientists who support intelligent design theory, which is, as opponents of intelligent design theory say, it's thinly veiled theism. And actually it is. Intelligent design theory, of course, goes against Big Bang and everything else that science up to date has come up with. So that scientists are becoming, significantly large number of scientists are becoming openly inclined toward theories that support theism, has brought about an atheistic backlash. And there are best-selling books, for instance, God is Not Great, an atheistic, supporting atheism. But, well, even if you say God is not great, well, he's God. Then there's God. Then how can you say there's no God? But if you say God is not great, then it means not God, actually. It's just like saying sugar is not sweet, because if God is not great, then he's not God. So sugar is not sweet. What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. So anyway, I happened to be sitting on a plane in America next to someone who was reading this book, and I wanted to speak to him, but seeing me dressed like this, he seemed embarrassed to do so. He said, well, I'm just reading it. And he didn't want to get into it. But I, looking at the book, what it was in the book while he was reading it, which in America, by the way, when you go there, it's considered very rude to do that, to read over someone's shoulder. You can bear it in mind. In India, people don't care. It's different culture there. So the book seemed to be mainly discussing the supposed faults of various saints in history. and doubting, just like it was said that one of the most famous saints in the Catholic world is Saint Francis of Assisi, who is considered a very saintly person. He came from a rich family in Italy, and he was expected to, you know, have a nice, happy life with all the comforts of the world, but he wasn't interested. And as a young man, he left home and became a monk and lived an extremely austere and humble life. And he was considered very saintly, and he was so saintly he was known to, it's said that he used to speak with the birds and animals. He had such rapport with them. So this is the kind of thing that atheists love, because they say it's just such nonsense. They're pointing out in the book, or very sarcastically they point out, as it, you know, everyone knows this is impossible. This is their stance. But then you find that many people, they think, well, maybe it is possible. The atheist just rejects the possibility of some persons having abilities which are uncommon. And of course, there are many instances or many cases which are well documented. I mean, even like 20 or 30 years ago on TV, they showed there was someone from Israel who, they were just, someone would hold a spoon in front of him and he would just look at it and it would go and bend. Just by the power of thought, he was able to do things like that. And millions of people would see it on TV. There's never been any scientific explanation for it. And, what do you do with things like that? They don't know. And then they've made research into the power of thought and how if you... all kinds of nasty things like by enough people wishing a cat to die, it died. And things like this, and influencing people's decision. There's some research, but it's not, even though there's lots of research, and on reincarnation also, by the way, there's been lots of research which clearly indicates that such things can happen, and reincarnation is something that does happen, but it's just kind of ignored by the scientific establishment, because what? They want to be atheists, I suppose. So they are scornful of any descriptions of higher states of consciousness. And they read the lives of various saints or spiritually minded people, and they look for faults, or they reinterpret something as a fault. So this is their business. But you know what? It's got nothing to do with the existence of God. Just like I can say without a hunka, without false ego, I hope I can say that quite a few people have faith in me as a spiritual person, because I've taken a role as a sannyasi and a guru and a spiritual guide. So many people, their faith in God is supported by my traveling around and speaking about theism and acting in a manner, I hope, which gives them faith in God. Now, I could change. I could say, hey, I don't like this anymore. I want to be a disco dancer. I like beer. I like beef. I could do it right now. I could walk out of here and get in an auto rickshaw and go to the nearest bar and drink down beer. Could do it, although it would look a little strange dressed like this to go in a bar. But I'm sure if you gave them the money, they'd give the beer to you, and I could do it, right? So if I was to do that, which just in case any of you might doubt it, I have absolutely no intention of doing, but we're just talking theoretically here. Now, if I was to do that, then many people who had faith in me previously, they might think, well, he believed in God, he was talking about God, and look what happened to him. That must mean there's no God. But this is called non sequitur. The conclusion does not follow from the premise. Someone, definitely people's faith in God is bolstered by saintly people. Or even in my case, someone like me who's trying to be saintly. But that ultimately, if someone falls away from the path, that doesn't mean that God doesn't exist. It's whether I chant Hare Krishna or don't, doesn't mean God, the existence of Krishna does not depend on that. It's independent of my believing in it. People ask, do you believe in God? It's a foolish question, because the existence of God does not depend on our belief in Him. It's just like people say, do you believe in, let's think, the magnetic North Pole? And most people think, well, it's not really something to believe in, is it? It's just accepted as an... But is there really such a thing as a magnetic North Pole? Again, it's one of those theoretical things. It's. I mean, there's no... You could maybe make a block of ice, some kind of pillar there or something, but it's not... It's not really something that tangibly exists. For that matter, according to physics, nothing really tangibly exists, does it? There's no such thing as a point or a line, ultimately. A line is a rectangle with very thin ends, right? As soon as you draw a line, there's a bunch of points, but there's no such thing as a point. So science has got itself in a mess also, because science is all made up of drawing lines. But then there are no lines. It's just an imagination, actually. It's a theoretical construct. So I can say, well, you do believe in it. So if someone says, well, I don't believe in a magnetic North Pole, does that mean that it doesn't exist? I don't believe in China. There's no such country as China. Say, well, of course there is. Well, can you prove it? Can you show it to me? Sure, you know, bring China here. People say, show me God. Well, God's bigger than all the whole universe. If you say, bring China here. How can you bring China? China's too big to bring to the IIT campus. If you say, bring God here, show me God. Well, he's too big for you. You're sitting inside him, sir. He's sitting inside you too. He's too big and too small. Two things are too big, you can't see them. If they're too small, you can't see them. He's too big and too small, but he's not material anyway. So even if you somehow or other had eyes to see subatomic particles, that's a good example. Non-existent subatomic particles. Do you believe in them? Well, maybe a quantum physicist would say no. They don't exist. There are no particles. But conventionally we say particle. Do you believe in electrons? So yeah. Well, show me. How are you going to show? But do you believe? Why do you believe? Well, ultimately you believe because other people whose intelligence and integrity you accept, they believe in them. But most people have not got the slightest idea what the proof of electrons is. You maybe know the theory of how they exist, but what's the practical demonstration of that? I don't know. They taught me at school, but I wasn't listening at the time, and I never really properly remembered. But most people just believe. We talk of electrons, and we just presume they exist. We don't say, well, I don't believe in electrons. But even if you didn't believe, would that mean they don't exist? Someone says to me, I was just talking to my brother, and then you interrupt and say, I don't believe in your brother. What do you mean you don't believe in my brother? He cheated you or something? No, I don't believe he exists. Well, strange thing to say. And then you go home and say to your brother, you look at him, touch him. Seems like he exists to me. And you can tell him, well, you don't exist. Why not? Well, I was speaking to someone and he said you don't exist. So if the scientist says, I don't believe in God, does that mean he doesn't exist just because he says so? Because he can't see him. I don't believe in China. Why not? Well, I can't see it. Well, I went there. Someone else can say, I went. Well, I didn't see it. So I don't believe in it. As far as I'm concerned, it doesn't exist. Well, you can believe like that, but you're a fool, because it does exist. Someone says, well, I don't believe in God. Well, someone else says, well, I've seen God. Well, I haven't, and you can't show God to me, therefore, there's no reason to believe it exists. Is this intelligent? Someone has seen God and experienced God, but someone else hasn't, and therefore he doesn't believe in that experience. Of course, China, you could say that's quite tangible, but then again, scientists believe in many things which are intangible, subtle. Spirit is more subtle. Energy is subtle. People didn't know that electricity existed. They didn't know. There are so many different kinds of waves, sound waves, light waves, radio waves, all kinds of electromagnetic waves. And sound we have some experience of, but we have no experience, direct experience of ultrasonic sound. But it exists. It's subtle. That you can't directly perceive it, does that mean it doesn't exist? And then spirit, its spirit is more. It's in another dimension of subtlety, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Because it doesn't fit according to your present way of thinking or your apparatus, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's foolish to deny something just because we don't have experience of it. So modern civilization is a failure. And I've given at least some theoretical reasons why we should begin to accept Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the solution. It's the solution not only to modern civilization, but to ancient civilization and to future civilization, because they're all full of problems. Ancient civilization, we may say, well, it was good in this way and that way, but it also had many problems. And future civilization will also have problems. And every civilization that will ever be will always have problems, because this material world is like that. And the solution in all cases is to take to Krishna consciousness, which is the process for getting out of this material world, and it's the only solution, because as long as we come back in this material world, we're going to be miserable. So Krishna consciousness is the solution. So the solution to modern society, there's no solution to birth, death, old age and disease, which are the real problems of human society, other than getting out of this material world. So the solution is Krishna consciousness. But which is the process for getting out of this material world. But then even if we even on the material platform, Krishna conscious, or the way of life that Krishna consciousness recommends, or the Krishna conscious people recommend, is actually more conducive even on the material platform for material happiness. Just like excessive heat, excessive cold, unnecessary wars. There are always wars, but some wars are really... Actually, they're all unnecessary, but just all... One symptom of Kali Yuga mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam is Vritta Hingsa. Meaningless violence, just like this terrorism, blowing people up. Meaningless violence. By blowing people up, it doesn't further the cause of whoever, whatever they want, it doesn't help them to get it. So, these things won't be there if there's Krishna consciousness. But they will be there if we go on with our program of exploitation. Modern science is based on the idea of exploitation of nature. But instead, if we cooperate with nature, understanding nature to be the energy of the Supreme Lord, and live according to nature's plan, then we can live simply and comfortably and make progress in fostering the higher consciousness that is necessary for self-realization. And in such a society, there won't be unnecessary, gross violence, as is common in the modern age. Violence is instituted in modern life. Meat-eating, slaughterhouses. So many, definitely, if you consider, what's the population of India? It's 1 billion and 1 million. What's that, 110 crore, something like that? So, approximately, how many chickens are killed every day? 110 crore people. If you say, let's say, one chicken for every 100 people. Let's say, let's just make a guess. One chicken for every 100 people every day. Is that all right? Maybe that's conservative guess. In India. Okay, so we have 110 crore. Then we come down to... Then we have... What's that? Now just see my weakness in mathematics. 110 million comes down to 11... Yeah, that's over a million chickens a day. Probably, isn't it? Every day killed in India. What to speak in other countries? And what to speak of other animals? Pretty bleak, pretty bad scene. There's concern about terrorism. Whew. What about the terrorism to the chickens? They also feel, they also suffer. There's a karmic reaction. There's pain and suffering. What's suffering? Their whole life is suffering in the poultry farm. They can't move. So, reactions are there. So, the gross suffering of modern life can be mitigated by people living a less sinful life. The modern world is very sinful. So we intend to teach this to people. Don't lead a sinful life. For every action, there is a reaction. And maybe not equal and opposite, maybe more than equal. You get severe karmic punishment for sinful activities. So be careful and chant Hare Krishna. Mostly I was speaking about pointing out the defects of modern civilization. That is elaborate. The answer is simple. Take to Krishna consciousness. Then what is Krishna consciousness? And that's also very elaborate. Who is Krishna? how he interacts with the material world. That's the real science. You want to get into that? There's plenty of science in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Calculation of time from the atom. It's there in Srimad Bhagavatam. How time is calculated in Vedic terms, microcosmic time is calculated. The smallest measurement of time is the time that it takes one trasarenu, as it's called. A trasarenu means a combination of two atoms. One to move past another. It's based on movement of bodies, as in modern science, and goes right up from the microcosmic time up to the macrocosmic time, which is the life of Lord Brahma, which means the whole duration of the universe. And then there is destruction of the universe, and then again, after some time, the whole universe comes into being again. So that's scientific. There's so much. I've said all these things here. I say it again and again. Maybe you've heard it all from me previously. All these things. It's not that difficult to understand all these things. But there is a lot of research to do that could be done by people who have scientific background and also faith in Shastra, to show that Shastra is not just a bunch of mumbo-jumbo, but even in terms of modern science, there's a lot to offer, a lot to be understood. So, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If anyone has any question or comment on this, please say so now. And then afterwards, we'll have a session of solution, namely chanting Hare Krishna and being happy. We may not be able to change the whole society immediately, but we can start with ourselves. And as you are considered the successful people in human society, or on your way to being successful, then we may also consider the observation of Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. It's not an instruction, it's a social observation in which he says, Yad yad acharati shreshtas tat tat evetaro janaha sayat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. Whatever those persons in society who are considered the best, whatever they do, that tends to be followed by others. So if you take this up, then people, this Krishna consciousness, they, out of respect for your material achievements, they may be more inclined to do so. Often people think that people take to religious or spiritual life because they've got nothing going for them materially, so they might as you're completely useless materially, you might as well try something spiritually. But when people who are what is called well-placed materially, when they take up spiritual life, then persons who are interested in being well-placed materially and are not as well-placed, they may tend to take note of their spiritual inclinations and take it more seriously, rather than thinking it's just something for people who have got nothing going materially. So, is there any question or comment, please? Yeah.
When I was reading one of the purports of Prabhupada, there he is writing that the person in Krishna consciousness can even work in a factory. But yeah. Still, if he gives the results for the Lord, then he is rightly placed like that. So, yeah. Is it, working in a factory seems to be a...
Srila Prabhupada writes that a person in Krishna consciousness can work in a factory, but he gives the income for furthering Krishna consciousness. So in this way is Srila Prabhupada approving of working in factories. Actually, at the time this was written, Srila Prabhupada's movement in the West was very much in a fledgling stage, and several of his disciples took on jobs like this to provide income for the movement. Yeah, a Krishna conscious person can do anything practically. We wouldn't recommend them to be a butcher, but remain in Krishna consciousness. He can work in a factory. That doesn't mean that we recommend working in a factory as the best way of life. Prabhupada elsewhere wrote that he had already written before writing this. This is in a Bhagavad Gita purport of Srila Prabhupada's. But before writing this, he had written in the Srimad Bhagavatam first canto that maybe it comes in the second canto, I can't remember. He says that factories are dungeons for demons. So it's not that he's promoting that, but he's pointing out that a devotee in any circumstance can maintain his Krishna consciousness. It's not wholly forbidden. If someone takes to Krishna consciousness and they're working in a factory, we won't necessarily tell them you have to stop working in a factory. If he has his family to maintain, and he may have to do that. But at the same time, we're saying it's not a very ideal situation for Krishna consciousness, but it's not in and of itself wholly destructive of Krishna consciousness either. It's possible you can preach to others Krishna consciousness in the factory also.
Because if you go outside of this gate, you can see so many industries, software industries, fully, you know, employed. Thousands of people working.
What's the point?
If we discourage the scientific inventions.
If we discourage scientific inventions, then?
Will people accept it or?
Well, discourage is one thing, but practically we have to show the better way of life. So Prabhupada wanted that. Some devotees at least, would live very simply and show how it's possible to live simply and happily without all these things. So some devotees are doing that. But the modern or the software industry, at least in India, it's not conducive for physical, mental or spiritual development. It just kills you. It's a torture. They throw people in, work them until they physically or mentally, literally collapse, and then they get rid of them and get someone else. Bangalore is full of there's mental hospitals full of software engineers, because they just worked and worked and worked till they snap. Companies don't care. So it's not very conducive for spiritual life.
People are going by commitments, Maharaj. So they have house, they have family.
Yeah, but it's not conducive for spiritual life. It's not even conducive for material life. Because you get money, but you have no time to do anything with it. So for spiritual life, you need time. You need time to perform sadhana. And the highly materialistic motivation, be successful, get more money, it works against the sattvic consciousness of detachment from this material world. So we have to work on making a better alternative. A better alternative in terms of how to live. That we don't need all these things, actually. I've been preaching these things for years. Not only I, but some devotees are beginning to take that up. In Ahmedabad, just outside the city, 100 acres or so of land that was donated to ISKCON years ago was never used in the way that Srila Prabhupada wanted it to be used, for simple living and high thinking. But now two devotees have gone there. One is qualified. He's from North India. He studied medicine in Madurai. Got his MBBS, did his internship, and then joined as a full-time brahmachari in the temple. So he's out there on the farm, and he doesn't know anything about it, but he wants to learn, to show people how there is a better way of life. That you don't, we don't need electricity, we don't need all these different things that Krishna has provided. We can live very simply and chant Hare Krishna and make spiritual progress. So we need to show that. People don't have faith in that. People don't believe that you can live. It's so funny, such a funny thing. Two generations ago, there was no widespread electricity in India. Nowadays, people don't believe that that you can live without it. They consider it essential. For thousands of years, people lived without it, and now people think you can't live without it. Isn't that strange? Isn't that foolish? And you think, what will we do without it? Then there's no TV. There's no mixie. Then what will we do? What will you do? You grind the idlis by hand and become very healthy by doing so. Then you don't need to go to some gym or become unhealthy by having so many machines. And grind the idli by hand, oh, it's so much work. But you put it in the mixie, and then you go to the gym and you pay them to do the same kind of exercise. And you think, oh, this is very good. But I would never dream of grinding the idli mix by myself. That's hard work. And you go to the gym and you do hard work. Anything else?
What is the difference between love and detachment?
What is the difference between love and attachment or detachment?
Attachment.
Love and attachment. Well, love develops on the basis of attachment. Attachment, love and attachment can be either material or spiritual. Material attachment and material so-called love is a cause of distress. Spiritual attachment is a cause of transcendental happiness. Attachment doesn't necessarily lead to love. One can be attached to someone out of hatred also. But generally one becomes attached to another. Why? Because of one becomes attached to another because of familial relationship, generally, or social relationship. So one becomes attached to Krishna, understanding that just like I may love my wife, my father, my mother, my children, because we have a very close relationship. And when we understand that the closest relationship that I have, which I'm denying, is my relationship with Krishna. And we become... And attachment is there not just because you're born in the same family. Just like I had four sisters, but we hardly ever spoke to each other. I didn't have much interaction with them. But it's also because of mutual interaction, and then you appreciate, you love. Why do people love their mothers? Anyone here who doesn't love their mother or didn't love their mother? Why do you love your mother? Because the mother sacrifices so much for you and genuinely cares for you. So you reciprocate with that. Then you wonder, you see, if you become distressed, if you hear your mother is sick, or traditionally in India, probably not the modern IIT generation, but they would look after their mothers and fathers in their old age because of love. The attachment is there, not just because you are born from the womb of the mother, but because after being born, she looked after you so well. So it's a reciprocation. Relationship. So when we understand that Krishna is looking after us and Krishna is calling us to have a loving relationship with us, with Him, which is our, that is intrinsic to our being. And Krishna is the most wonderful person in all ways. Everything about Krishna is simply increases our attachment and love to Him. Then naturally we want to enter into that relationship. That's a very big and wonderful subject. Are you reading Srila Prabhupada's books? You didn't read any of them? Oh, you're coming here new now. Oh, that's a very nice question. To answer that fully would require at least 1,000 lifetimes. But actually, it can be answered fully because love for Krishna, there's no end to it. It's infinite. So there's no end to discussing. But it's not just a matter of discussion, it's something to be entered into. Just like we're talking about theoretical knowledge, like mathematics. But just like your relationship with your mother, it's not just something theoretical, it's not just something, love is not just something people write about in poems or in stories, but it's something to be personally entered into. So Krishna consciousness is like that. We're talking about it, but we can enter into that. It's something that we can all take part in. Krishna reciprocates. So I was going to recommend that you could read this book, The Nectar of Devotion, which discusses all the different phases, all different aspects of love of Krishna. It's a lot of nectar. Who's read The Nectar of Devotion? Book by Srila Prabhupada. Wonderful book. Describing all different phases of different kinds of love. There are four kinds of love, or if you want, you can extend it to five basic kinds. The most basic is the shantarati. That means it's attachment, but not really developed love, appreciation. And dasyarati, in which one, the object of love, one considers oneself the servant. Servant of God. Sakyarati, which one considers oneself the friend of Krishna. Vatsalyarati, in which one considers oneself the parent, guardian, or guru of Krishna. And Madhurya or Shringarati, in which one takes the role of a lover of Krishna. So it's a very big subject. And then there are bhavas, anubhavas, stai bhava, so many things. Anything else?
Sometimes devotional service, the interest in it is not consistent.
Interest in devotional service is not consistent.
It's interesting sometimes and it is not. So why is that?
Why is it that we sometimes find it interesting and sometimes we don't? Because we haven't really entered into the spirit of devotional service, and thus we consider it like that. In the modern world, we are in material consciousness, which is definitely exacerbated in the modern world. We are trained, or the culture is such that we grow up thinking of everything in terms of what in Vedic psychology are called sankalpa and vikalpa. So sankalpa is used in a different sense. This word comes in Tamil, sankalpa. It's a religious term. You usually say some religious act, sankalpa. But it's used in a different sense here. It means, here it means acceptance and rejection. I like this, I don't. Everything we see, touch, taste, smell, feel, here, think about, we think about it in terms of, do I like it or don't I like it? What's that? Some insect is biting or something? Is it? Some insect is biting? One of those centipedes, is it?
Something like
that. Yeah, so there's an example. If you see some centipede is going to crawl on your foot, you immediately shake it off. Because you reject. This is not this is something I don't like. Or if someone comes up and offers you an ice cream, you may think, oh, that's something I like. Or if you just ate 10 ice creams, you may think, oh, that's something I don't like. So everything we judge like that. Do I like it or don't I like it? And we accept it or reject it on that basis. And then our interest in something may wane and wax. You know these terms, wane and wax? It's used for the moon also. It means to decrease and increase. So sometimes you may say, well, in my youth I was very interested in cricket, but now I'm not very interested. I used to like playing chess, but I'm not much interested anymore. It comes and goes. I used to like playing chess, then I lost interest for some time. Then again, I took it up. So like that. I was, why? Well, I felt interested. It appealed to me, then I kind of lost interest. Then again, it appealed to me. So like that. Based on our feeling of like and dislike, sankalp, acceptance, sankalp, vikalp, rejection. Is the activity of the mind. So Krishna consciousness, we may think like that, but it feels good. Nah, I'm not so interested anymore. It comes and goes. I used to like playing chess, then I lost interest for some time. Then again, I took it up. So like that. I was, why? Well, I felt interested. It appealed to me, then I kind of lost interest. Then again, it appealed to me. So like that. Based on our feeling of like and dislike, sankalp, acceptance, sankalp, vikalp, rejection, is the activity of the mind. So Krishna consciousness, we may think like that, but it feels good. Nah, I'm not so interested now. I got other things to do. Then again, after some time, oh, okay, yeah, all right. Let's get into it a bit more. Then again, oh no, I'm too busy with other things and it's too much effort. This is called the mental platform, not the spiritual platform. Krishna consciousness is enacted on the spiritual platform, which begins with a different kind of sankalp, that understanding what is my ultimate interest, when I understand what is my ultimate interest, I will never lose interest in Krishna consciousness. When we understand this is the only thing which is really of any value to me. Other things are, even my IIT degree and my career, these are all temporary. That's only for one lifetime. But Krishna consciousness is, that's for eternity. So, it's due to considering Krishna consciousness as just something else to be accepted or rejected. Whereas if we actually understand what is Krishna consciousness, then it's to be accepted with full acceptance. It's not something to be that we take or leave as we like it. Anything else?
If a person, you mentioned that one person may be working in something like the software job where they literally, they tax them possibly.
Yeah, they're like put through a, you know, the machine for the sugarcane juice? That's the software job. squeeze you.
So, he wants to do some spiritual advancement. But at the same time, he's still forced to work in the job. He can pray to the Lord and Krishna can give him a solution, right?
What is the solution? You can pray to God. Well, not openly in the software job. The point is that for advancement in Krishna consciousness, it's not a matter of just making a little prayer here and there, but it's a matter of serious application to sadhana. Just like those who are seriously practicing Krishna consciousness, they chant a minimum of 16 rounds of the Maha Mantra Hare Krishna. What is the solution? You can pray to God. Well, not openly in the software job. The point is that for advancement in Krishna consciousness, it's not a matter of just making a little prayer here and there, but it's a matter of serious application to sadhana. Just like those who are seriously practicing Krishna consciousness, they chant a minimum of 16 rounds of the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's 16 times 108 times minimum every day. How many is that, mathematician? 1,750 times. So that takes time to do that. And it's to be done with concentration. And that's actually a compromise. Otherwise, we should chant at least 64 rounds, actually. So it requires time to do that, and not just time just to, you know, just like squeezing it in, but quality time. And you can't do that. In modern life, all your time is taken up for material activities. So the whole society, not just software jobs, that's a prime example. Software jobs in India. But where they give you like a 2-year initial period when you come and they don't pay you much, and then you're completely burned out by that time. And then they get someone else on a low wage in this way. So it's wholly non-conducive for spiritual advancement.
But if this person has a sincere desire, but what is the hope for him?
What is the hope for him? Well, he should seriously consider. What is my goal of life? If I go on like this, actually even materially, like I say, even materially, the ultimate prospect is not very good, because you may earn lots of money, but if you have to go on your whole life like that, then what's the use? What's the use of earning money that you never have time to do anything with, except, you know, maybe pay your doctor's fees when you get all kinds of diseases? You can go to the best hospital. What's the use of that? I mean, even we only recommend people that the only proper use of your human life is to take to spiritual life. But even if, just for the sake of argument, even if I had no interest in spiritual life, but I was advising people on the material platform, I would say, don't work like this 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. Because even materially, what's the value of doing so? However much money, even if you earn $1 million an hour, if you have to go, if there's some condition, you have to do this for the next 40 years, then what would be the point? What would be the value? Whatever rate you get, you're a slave, practically. You actually are literally a slave. There are many companies that, you know, they don't let you out. You live in the office. They bring you food, they have a place for you to shower and sleep.
They want to finish the job in 1 week.
Yeah, and then when you, and even if you go home on your so-called holiday, they'll call you. And even in the middle of the night, you got some sleep at home for the first time. Your wife, she opened the door and said, "Who's that?" Oh, that's my husband. And then, you know, you go home and you have, you think you're going to get some rest at last, and then the phone goes off 12 o'clock at night. Okay, come back to the office. That's it. You're a slave. You're a prisoner. So I wouldn't recommend that for anyone. Then, you know, somehow or other find another job. But the thing is, all the jobs are like that. So it's, you're trapped. Your advancement is, your success is almost literally killing you. One who's intelligent enough will at least make the endeavor to step out of it. You can join us, become a brahmachari in the Hare Krishna conscious, Hare Krishna movement if you like, if you're ready for that. I don't know how many people are ready for that.
But many people are already.
And we also work hard, you know, but there's a difference. We're also not much sleep and you know, full dedication, no holidays. But it's different because our life is dedicated to Krishna out of choice, with the understanding that this is for our best benefit, and we like it. We, of course, software engineers may like that it's a challenge. Every project is a challenge. But then there comes a burnout at some point where, you know, your brain doesn't work, but you're still trying to force it to work. Anyone ever experienced that? I do too, because I write. I go on writing marathons, self-imposed. There comes some point where the computer screen is there, the keys are there, I'm there, but there's nothing there. The brain has its limits also. I feel brain dead. Because all those rays coming out of the laptop, that's not very good for the brain waves either. So, what was I saying? Yeah, you
burnouts. People will get burned out.
Yeah, one should intelligently choose what is actually beneficial for me. And even materially, most of the so-called good options nowadays are not very good. Okay, well, come and join our firm. Not joking. If you can do it, if you're convinced. Yeah, another thing I was saying about, we work hard in Krishna consciousness also, but we're actually just like this, working for some company or in some software job. You may have some intellectual interest, but ultimately it saps you of your energy. But in Krishna consciousness, we get more energy because it's what we really like to do, and it's connecting the soul with Krishna. Whereas anything we do materially, it never ultimately satisfies us. And especially this kind of thing where you're just, like I say, put through the sugar cane squeezer. It just drains you. Whereas Krishna consciousness, you get more and more energy. Because of you were saying about love and attachment, the reciprocation with Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. We feel Krishna's love that sustains us. And even the brain goes dead, if I'm writing, doing a writing, actually we're not recommended to do that, because we should, our life is what we should have, sadhana every day, chanting, singing, worshipping Krishna, offering flowers to Krishna. This nourishes the soul. So there's no burnout. Yeah, then? So shall we do, how are we doing on time here? Oh, plenty of time. Yeah.
Krishna reciprocates to our love, so you are saying that Krishna reciprocates to our love.
I'm saying that Krishna reciprocates to our love, and actually he does. Can you experience love of Krishna in this material body? Yes. Technically, that's called Swarup Siddhi. That one can attain all perfection, pure love of Krishna consciousness in this body. that one, but to actually enter into Krishna consciousness, to enter into Krishna's lila, that's called vastu siddhi. When one leaves this body and takes a spiritual body and enters into Krishna's pastimes. So for that we have to get another body, spiritual body. But this body can be spiritualized and we can be fully prepared and for that and fully experience Krishna's love even within this lifetime. How to spiritualize the material world? Material body? By having no other desire than to serve Krishna. Spiritual means Atendriya Priti Vancha Tare Bale Kam Krishnendriya Priti Icha Dhare Premanam. Material means the desire to satisfy oneself. And spiritual means the desire to satisfy Krishna. So one is called kam and the other is called prem. So if the body is fully engaged in activities for satisfying Krishna, then it's spiritual because it's not used for any material purpose. It's not spiritual in the sense of being Satchit Ananda, that it's eternal, full of bliss and knowledge by constitution, but it's spiritualized. It has the same potency. Just like iron, an iron rod is naturally at room temperature, it's just, you know, room temperature, whatever that may be. Or usually iron, yeah, whatever it may be. So, but then if you put it in a hot fire, then gradually it absorbs the heat and it can act as fire. If you touch the hot iron rod to someone's skin, it will burn because it has absorbed the effect of fire. So if we remain in the same way, if we remain in consciousness of Krishna, then we are spiritualized. Just as the rod becomes fireized, or whatever the word may be, if there is any such word.